Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We are starting the week with the political junkie, as we do most Mondays. Ken Rudin with us. Hey, Ken, how are you? How was your week last week?
It was lovely. Thank you very much. Actually, I spoke to you from California.
I know you did.
And of course, actually, as I was driving around in Sacramento, which was not that close to the wildfires, you could still smell the smoke, feel the smoke in your lungs. When you look on television and see what's happening, it's just horrific.
You were also there, Ken, for a speech by Hillary Clinton about her new book, right? And then you were going to discuss it, I think, on public radio out there. What was your takeaway of the
speech?
That's
correct. Having read the book, which I enjoyed, actually, I thought the speech was kind of, you know, Hillary Clinton not completely opening up, but even though she was far more open than she had been during the campaign, and that was one of the complaints about her. But it was a good speech. I mean, you know, a lot of her jabs towards Donald Trump seemed to go over very well with the crowd. But it seems like, if I got one thing out of that speech, it seemed like Hillary Clinton may have finally come to terms with what happened in 2016, but the audience clearly did not.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, you know, basically they're just, you know, I mean, Hillary Clinton said, look, he's in the White House and we did whatever we could. But of course, there are a lot of Democrats who said they probably could have done more, should have done more. But every time there was a mention of Donald Trump, there were boos and hisses. And it just felt like, having talked to as many people in the audience afterwards and before, actually, as I did, it just seems like that it's a, you know, when Donald Trump talks about fake news, these people were talking about a fake president and an illegal president and maybe an unconstitutional president. It was pretty strong stuff.
So they're probably the base of the base of Hillary Clinton, right? And I wanted to ask you about Donald Trump's base of the base, because it seems like a lot of what he's doing these days is targeted and tilted towards them. But I wonder how much they matter in the next election cycle we have coming up, which are the congressional elections.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, of course, here I was in California, which was, or should I call it the People's Republic of California, because they're trying to be the alternative to the Trump presidency,
right,
with Jerry Brown talking about immigration and climate change and things like that. So this was, as you say, this was the base of the base of Hillary Clinton. And now when Donald Trump is doing all these things about Iran and health care, look, as a lot of it is what he promised he would do in 2016. Not much of it is shocking. I mean, I guess what's shocking is maybe some of the outbursts he has against his fellow Republicans, or when he'll say that, look, to Puerto Rico, it's your fault and we can't stay here forever. But for the most part, what he is doing is much of which is what he promised in 2016, and whether he does it by executive order or, well, actually, that's kind of funny that he's doing it by executive order, considering he spent much of the campaign criticizing President Obama for doing what he did,
right,
with executive order. But I'll tell you one thing that the two of them have in common. They both looked at Congress and saw it dysfunctional, and they felt they had to act on their own.
Well, I mean, this is exactly why I'm asking you about how much leverage that base has in the next cycle, which is what Congress is talking about and which is what you would think the president should be concerned about, that he has, you know, the fullest majority that he can get in the House and the Senate. Do they matter to members of Congress who are running in different districts with different agendas as much as they seem to matter to the president?
Well, that's an unknown question, and the answers are unknown. I mean, obviously, when you think of health care, a lot of these Republicans campaigns against the Affordable Care Act, promising to get rid of it. But if these new changes, these new executive actions by the president dismantles so-called Obamacare and millions more are thrown off coverage or can't afford coverage, these constituents are hurt. So I think, you talk about the members of Congress who, you know, will back President Trump to the hilt in many ways, they are torn what to do about things like health care that could, you know, keep their pledges, but at the same time hurt their constituents.
So so this executive order that we just talked about on health care, I was reading an op-ed in The Washington Times by Byron York, who says that even though a number of these executive orders are coming out of what you've just noted, a Congress that can't pass much of the president's agenda, the president is showing his base and his voters that he isn't going to be bound by any party's principles, right? That he truly is a guy who came in to disrupt and he doesn't care what the parties think. And one of the ways that he's able to execute that is through these executive orders. What do you think about that argument?
Well, I mean, that's exactly what he's doing. I mean, again, if you see a Congress, so even though this is a Republican, well, I was going to say it's a Republican-controlled Congress, it's a Republican majority. I don't know if it's controlled by any party because they can't seem to agree among themselves. But for all the promises that all the things that the president is doing and saying that he wants to make changes, in the same time, it seems like a lot of spite, almost like, well, if Obama did this, it must be wrong, so I have to undo it. And for all the things he's doing about health care, about, you know, cutting off the payments or the subsidies to the health insurance companies and coming up with this executive order that basically allows cheaper plans, although less coverage, he's doing what he said he wanted to do, and I don't think he cares about what Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and other Republicans have to say. But you know, I mean, there's still going to be a price to pay if more Americans are without coverage or can't afford it or things like that, and it becomes an issue in 2018, so he or 2020 as well. So yes, he satisfies his base. He does what his base would like him to do. But there are real, it's more than politics in some ways. It's about real people, real lives, and real dilemmas that these people face, especially when it comes to things like health care.
The political junkie is with us as he is on Mondays. And if you have a question for him, 651-227-6000, and you can tweet it at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. I want to talk to you about Bannon because some of the stuff he was saying over the weekend has made a lot of news. One of the things he's suggesting is that he's declaring war on the GOP establishment. Then I heard a pretty interesting interview with the guy who's heading up the Senate reelection committee for Republicans, who said, well, look at the candidates that he's running, you know, as he declares war on the GOP establishment. I mean, these are people that voters have turned away. These are people with shady backgrounds. What do you look at Bannon's effort and conclude about that, Ken?
I think that Bannon really never, I mean, he may have left the White House on paper, but he has never left Donald Trump. He feels that there are some candidates who are just more willing to fight the establishment. And for many Republicans, or certainly Steve Bannon Republicans, Mitch McConnell is much more of an enemy than, you know, than Chuck Schumer or the Democrats. So when I think more is, I'm sorry, when Bannon is probably more effective outside the White House, and when he's backing some candidates who have lost in the past, like Kelly Ward in Arizona against Jeff Flake. But when you look at the senators who are trying to run, make things happen, make things work, like Bob Corker of Tennessee, who, of course, is retiring, like Jeff Flake of Arizona, Roger Wicker of Mississippi, Dean Heller of Nevada. These are they're conservative, but they're pragmatists. And that's not what Breitbart and Bannon want. So when, as we saw in Alabama, even though the president was ostensibly backing Luther Strange, the appointed incumbent there, Steve Bannon and maybe a lot of the Trump supporters really wanted Roy Moore, who's a real Trump person. I mean, he's a true ideologue. He doesn't believe in compromise. And I think that a lot of Republicans, including Steve Bannon, just don't like the word compromise. They don't like the fact that they have Republican control majority in the Senate, nothing is getting passed. The health care never went anywhere. A lot of them blame McConnell. So maybe they need to shake up the establishment, the status quo, by backing these right-wing challengers to these pragmatist senators.
You know, you just mentioned Corker and Flake in that group of senators that you were talking about, and they also tend to be two of the senators of the president's own party that he's gone after, really, you know, really in straightforward, pretty aggressive ways. I think I was in Arizona when all this stuff with Jeff Flake was coming down. It was brutal. I mean, it made a lot of news in Arizona. It's hard to see. Voters tend to hate Congress but love the people that represent them, right, in Congress. I don't know what the president really gets out of that when he goes after some of these politicians who are well-known and presumably pretty well-liked among Republicans in their home state.
Well, actually, with Jeff Flake, I mean, I've met Jeff Flake a few times, and I happen to like him. I think he's a good guy, but you're talking about well-liked back home. The last poll I saw, among Republicans, he has 18% approval.
Ouch.
And I think what Donald Trump is trying to, the message he's trying to say is that you take me on at your own peril. You take on Donald Trump, you take on the people who back me, and it's a risk to your political future.
But Ken,
Bob Corker.
But is that 18% for Jeff Flake? And wow, I didn't know that. But is that because Trump's mad at him, or is that because Republicans in the state think he hasn't delivered and they see him as too moderate? What's your analysis of that?
Well, I think if you're Donald Trump and you're attacking Jeff Flake, then other Republicans say, well, this guy may be a squishy moderate and maybe he doesn't deserve re-election. The fact is that, remember, not too long ago, Jeff Flake wrote this book,
right,
The Conscience of a Conservative, named after Barry Goldwater's original book, that basically lambasted Trump for lack of leadership and lack of being serious. But again, when you have, you know, I mean, just like with John McCain, when he faced Kelly Ward 2 years ago, there is a strong right-wing part of the Republican Party that does not like the accommodation wing of the John McCains and the Jeff Flakes, and they will back conservatives. So, look, they don't always get successful, but I think they'd rather be pure. I think it was a senator from South Carolina who once said, Jim DeMint, who said, I'd rather have a minority of Republicans than 65 or 60 Arlen Specters in the Republican Party, meaning that I'd rather be pure than just have a majority.
The senator from Pennsylvania, right?
Who later left the Republican Party.
Right, it was
because
seen it was, as a moderate.
Because he, yeah.
Where do you put Rand Paul in all this? Because he golfed with Trump over the weekend.
It's interesting about Rand Paul. Rand Paul talks a good game. I mean, he's one of those true believers, perhaps even more to the right of Donald Trump, along with Mike Lee of Utah and Ted Cruz of Texas. But Rand Paul promises that he's going to vote no, but ultimately he doesn't break from the president as much as he says he will. Whereas Bob Corker, Susan Collins, who just announced she'll stay in the Senate and not run for governor, I mean, they walk the walk and talk the talk. They say they'll be independent, and they show it by their votes. Rand Paul less so, I think. I think he talks the talk, but ultimately he doesn't break from the president as much as he says he will.
Ken, I have a quick question on the tax bill. I mean, apparently there's a meeting today with McConnell and the president and other GOP leaders. They've got to be worried that the tax bill follows the same path as repealing health care. What's their secret weapon in trying to get something through?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, the thought of them failing to get health care through after they promised for 7 years they would do so, and then they said, okay, forget about health care. Our real goal, our real object this year is to pass tax reform. But in many ways, that's much more difficult than health care. It hasn't been done since 1986. There are a lot of questions about who benefits and what it does to the economy. So the Republicans are hardly on the same page as they were on health care, as they are on tax reform. And so I don't know. You know, everybody says, well, what if that fails as well? And, of course, I don't know what it means. Maybe it'll embolden Steve Bannon for saying, okay, well, McConnell can't, you know, get his act straight, can't get his troops in line. It's time for a new kind of leadership. But, of course, the Democrats are also saying if the Republicans can't govern, maybe it's time to turn the power back to the Democrats
in
2018. I don't know if that happens because the numbers don't favor them.
They don't really have much time left to be able to enact some major legislation off the president's agenda at the year. I mean, they've got to be freaking out about that.
they are freaking out because also December 8th is coming very quickly, and that's the when they had their short-term plan with Trump and Schumer and Pelosi, you know, Chuck and Nancy, to fund the government. It was a short-term plan that expires on December 8th. All those issues are going to come back to the forefront on in the days approaching December 8th about funding for the wall, funding for the government, and what kind of compromises get done. So forget about the tax form. They may talk about government shutdown if they can't fund the government. And again, if you're the majority party, if you have the majority in the House and the Senate and control the White House and still are talking about shutting down the government, that sends a signal to voters out there. One would think.
All right. Ken, good to talk to you as always on our Mondays. I look forward to them and I'll see you next Monday.
Thank you. Another optimistic conversation with Ken.
That's right. It's all sweetness and light with Ken Rudin, the political junkie.